I'm Carl Azus, back from the Thanksgiving holiday and hoping you're doing well. There's been a lot of fast-moving news over the past few days concerning a new variant or new mutation of coronavirus. These diseases typically mutate as they circulate around the world. Is this something to worry about? The short answer is, no one really knows yet. Last Friday, the World Health Organization announced it would name the new variant Omicron. Some are pronouncing that Omicron. It's another letter of the Greek alphabet, like Delta. Though it's not known exactly where the mutated virus first appeared, it was first identified in South Africa. And the doctor who made that identification says Omicron's symptoms were, quote, extremely mild in the initial patients she saw. They reported being tired and having body aches and pains. They did not have a bad cough or the loss of taste or smell as people with other versions of COVID have experienced. This was observed from a small group of patients, though, so doctors aren't sure how Omicron will affect a wider population. This variant has a large number of mutations, according to the World Health Organization, meaning Omicron is significantly different from other strains of COVID. Researchers don't know if it could still infect people who've recovered from other versions and have natural COVID immunity, or if Omicron can infect people who've received a COVID vaccine. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson says it can affect those who've been fully vaccinated. And his government is one of several that have put new restrictions on travelers from southern African nations. Many of the Omicron cases so far have been linked to South Africa and the countries around it.
More and more countries are confirming cases of this troubling variant, particularly across Europe. Now, several of those people confirmed to have the Omicron variant have traveled from southern Africa, where I'm sitting. Scientists here have been angry at the swift travel bans being put in from across the world, including the UK and on Monday the US. There was a discussion between the Secretary of State of the US, Antony Blinken, and his counterpart here in South Africa. Blinken praised South African scientists, saying that their swift description and alert of this variant should be a model for the rest of the world. But the South African government says that in some way they are being punished because of their, quote, excellent scientists. There is now a race to figure out how bad this variant is. Will it have breakthrough infections with the vaccine? Will it go through immunity from previous infections? We just don't know. There are some indications it's more transmissible, and the cases are rising fast here in Gauteng province of South Africa. But a lot is still unknown as more and more countries shut this region off. David McKenzie, CNN, Johannesburg.
10-second trivia. What U.S. city is believed to be the source of the retail term Black Friday? Chicago, Illinois, Indianapolis, Indiana, New York, New York, or Philadelphia, Pennsylvania? In the 1960s, police in Philadelphia reportedly used the term to describe the shopping and sports mayhem that hit the city after Thanksgiving. Traditionally, the day after Thanksgiving is one of the busiest days on the U.S. shopping calendar. So the term Black Friday has also been used to describe when retail stores move into the black, meaning they show a profit for the year. It makes sense that store traffic, the number of people shopping in person, increased more than 47% this year over last year when more stayed home because of COVID concerns. But according to Sensormatic Solutions, a retail analytics and operations company, this year's Black Friday store traffic was still 28% lower than it was in 2019 before the pandemic. Observers believe it's because people started shopping sooner this year and spread out their buying instead of concentrating it on just one day. Returns are inevitably part of this process.
Free returns. They're customers' insurance policy for shopping online. But what happens to those returns after you give them back might surprise you.
So customers really believe that the product just goes into the black hole or ends up being resold to another customer. In many instances, that's not the case.
In reality, many of these products never return anywhere. Instead, they may end up here. Or even here.
You know, easily 25% of all these returns get destroyed.
In fact, returns have become such a headache for retailers that in some cases they're just refunding customers and letting them keep or donate the unwanted items.
The cost of getting the product back from the customer is much higher than traditional logistics getting the product to the customer.
Turns out, free returns are far from it.
There's a very large disparity between the amount of returns that happen from consumers that buy products online versus in the store. In a brick and mortar store, we typically get somewhere between 5 and 10% returns, but online we get north of 30% returns.
In 2020, the coronavirus pandemic pushed online shopping and returns to record highs. CBRE, a commercial real estate service, estimates that Americans will end up returning $70 billion worth of online purchases post-holiday season. That's a staggering 73% growth from the previous five-year average. Here's why that's a problem.
The entire returns business in and of itself is just extremely complex.
Big retailers already use data to improve the shopping experience on the front end. Walmart believes data should play a bigger role in the returns process, too.
We're constantly digging into the data to understand why customers are bringing stuff back. And we actually can solve a bigger portion of the end of the life cycle of the product by stopping the return from ever occurring. So if I know that I have an item that is low quality, we work with the manufacturer to fix it or we quit selling it.
That's because accepting a return isn't always easy either. A warehouse optimized for fulfilling orders now has to receive a product and inspect it. Then someone needs to decide whether it can be resold or not. In the end, an online return can require up to 20% more space and labor than one made in store. Those costs are part of why Optoro, a return solution company, estimates that returning a $50 item can cost a retailer 59% of its sale price. Often, the math just doesn't add up.
Look, the best return is the one that never happens. But when it does happen, it's about stopping the return or finding alternate ways where the customer brings it back to handle the item, to handle the return.
And that's where liquidators come in.
So this is a product that came in one of these pallets.
Liquidators like this one are the middlemen between retailers and resellers.
We sort, organize, process, and figure out methods to get them to the right home. And that's really what we do here.
They buy returned merchandise, then sort and evaluate it before auctioning it to discount stores and authorized resellers.
You'd be able to resell them at a profit because you'd be purchasing them at a real fraction of what the actual cost is.
But some returns never make it to a liquidator.
Products ending up in landfills, customers don't really even think of that as part of the purchase process.
Every year, returns produce an estimated 5 billion pounds of waste in landfills.
It's generally risky to remind consumers how potentially wasteful their consumerism is. So in general, retailers are hesitant to lean too heavily into those kind of awareness campaigns.
The solution is complicated, but Walmart, for one, says online shopping could actually help reduce the number of returns made.
When a customer goes online and tells me I'm returning this item for these reasons, I'm more apt to harness the information than I am if you just walk into a store and drop it off.
And it's not just data. Tools like better sizing predictions for clothes and shoes can help reduce the likelihood a customer purchases the wrong size. AI chatbots can help answer customers' questions quickly and keep labor costs down for retailers. Even augmented reality is helping customers try out products before they buy.
It's been said that you gotta learn to crawl before you walk, but this toddler in China is pretty good at snowboarding, and she isn't walking well yet. The girl isn't even a year old. Her parents say they were amazed when they just tried putting her in snowboarding shoes and then saw her stand up and start sliding. She wears protective gear inside of her snowsuit, and at 11 months, she's doing this and seems to be loving it. Is it insanity? It is infanity. Critics might say it is just her folks' vanity. But she's got steez, show a little humanity. Shredding the gnar with no need for inanity. Easy to see and to be a big fan of thee. Grommet or toddler, part of the planet thee. Winter wunderkind, search the whole land of the earth. She's the youngest on its snowy canopy. Time for the shout-out. We want to recognize Carthage High School today. Thanks to the students and teachers of Carthage, Texas, for your request on our YouTube channel. My name is Carl Azuz. Thank you so much for watching. That's it for CNN.